to Radio Curious. I'm Barry Vogel. Wind Cave National Park, the eighth national park created in 1903, is located in the Black Hills of southwestern South Dakota and is the subject of this edition of Radio Curious. Our guest is Tom Farrell, Chief of Interpretation at Wind Cave National Park. But before we visit with Tom Farrell, I want to share a bit of the history of Wind Cave, as taken from the Wind Cave National Park website and the Lakota Sioux website. Lakota stories speak of a hole in the Black Hills that blows air, which is a sacred place for the Lakota people. The teepee rings near the present-day elevator building at Wind Cave National Park indicate that the Lakota camped in the area and knew about the cave's small natural entrance. Sitting Bull's nephew is quoted as saying that Wind Cave in the Black Hills was the cave from which Wakantanka, the Great Mystery, sent the buffalo out into their hunting grounds. Another Lakota story tells of a beautiful woman known as Buffalo Woman who came out of the cave and gave the bison to the Lakota people. In 1881, a couple of non-Lakota deer hunters happened onto the cave when one of them was following a wounded deer up a ravine when he heard a loud whistling sound and noticed grass caught in a strong breeze on what otherwise was a calm day. Investigating, he found a small hole blowing with such force that it blew his hat off. Returning to show what he thought was a phenomenon to some of his friends, one of them put a hat in front of the hole, which was immediately sucked into the cave because the wind had changed directions. The direction of that wind is in fact related to the difference in atmospheric pressure between the cave and the surface. To understand this phenomenon, it's important to understand barometric or atmospheric pressure. At sea level, gravity is strongest and air pressure is greatest. But because gravity weakens as we go up in altitude above sea level, air pressure is lower at higher altitudes. However, the barometric pressure at any given location on the Earth is constantly changing. On the surface, weather is driven by the sun, which heats some areas of the moon more than others. Temperature differences lead to pressure differences, which produce winds, bring in clouds, or clear skies. Understanding barometric pressure readings help forecast the weather. A rising barometric pressure often suggests clearing skies and fair weather, while falling pressure indicates that wet or stormy weather may be on the way. Areas of low pressure are associated with severe storms, such as tornadoes or hurricanes. Because Wind Cave is so large and has a lot of space, it has an air pressure system of its own. That air pressure system is always working to be equal to the air pressure system on the surface or outside the cave. So if a high pressure system is on the surface outside the cave, air will be forced into the cave to create a high pressure system inside the cave. When there is a low pressure system on the surface outside the cave, the high pressure in the cave forces the air out, so the cave will also have a low pressure system, in other words, equalizing the cave pressure with the outside pressure. This is referred to as cave breathing. Barometric airflow through the natural entrance of Wind Cave not only gave the cave its name, but also provides an opportunity for determining the approximate volume or size of the cave passages. Monitoring and recording the barometric airflow through the cave's natural entrances helps one understand the volume of air in the cave, which can be used to calculate the total volume of the cave itself. At this time, it has been estimated that less than 10% of the cave's actual volume has been determined. That does not mean, however, that the mileage of the cave is identifiably known. There could be many very small passages or one great huge one, but it does give an idea of how big the cave could be. Many caves are big enough to have barometric winds. However, the wind at Wind Cave is very noticeable because of the very small natural entrance. Wind Cave, one of the longest caves in the world, is also one of the most complex. Currently, almost all of Wind Cave lies beneath a 1 square mile area of land. Wind Cave's story and history, including links to the Lakota Sioux creation myth, may be found at the National Park Wind Cave website, www.nps.gov/WICA. When Radio Curious visited Wind Cave National Park on September 23, 2014, we met with Tom Farrell, the Chief of Interpretation at Wind Cave National Park, and began our conversation when I asked him to describe the history and the discovery of the Wind Cave.
Well, this cave was discovered thousands and thousands of years ago by the American Indians. And they were attracted to it probably by the same thing that attracted cowboys here in 1881, just air coming out of a very small opening. The cowboys, Tom and Jesse Bingham, discovered this in 1881. They were looking for a deer that one of them had shot. It was a relatively calm day, and they came across a bush that appeared to be in a violent windstorm. And when they looked behind the bush, they found the small opening here.
By small, the diameter would be?
I don't know. I don't have the specs. It's that right there.
Right here. Yeah. So that looks like maybe
pretty small.
Somewhat oval or heart-shaped, 2 feet by 2 feet.
It's pretty darn small.
And that's where the wind came out of.
Yeah, it still does today. You can feel it today. It acts like a large barometer. If there's more air pressure inside the cave than out, let's say there's a low pressure air coming through, then it means there's more air pressure inside than out, so it blows out. If there's a storm coming, or in other words, nice weather coming, where there's a high front moving in, there's more air pressure outside the cave than in, then it blows in. So it acts like a large barometer, and that's something that the McDonald family that lived here in the 1890s, they noticed that you could predict the weather based on what the cave is doing.
Is there another entrance or exit to the cave?
There's no natural opening that we know of that hasn't been enlarged. There's another opening that they dug out back in the 80s, I believe it was, connected up with the cave. People nowadays go in a nearby walk-in entrance and they come up in an elevator. But in terms of natural opening, if this ravine hadn't eroded down the way it did and exposed this opening, we might never know this cave was here. And this is the sixth longest cave in the world. We know of 142 miles of cave so far. So it's just amazing that you have this huge cave, and it's very hard to get to because there's so few openings.
What is the Native American history of this cave?
Well, we know it's sacred to many tribes, especially up here in the northern plains. It's the Lakota consider it their origin site, where they emerge from the underground to this surface here. So it's a place that we want to treat with respect.
Do the Lakota people have input into the interpretation of the history?
Take a look at that sign right behind you. We consulted with the tribes. We had 5 consultation meetings lasting over a series of years, and they're the ones that wrote the sign.
And the map is in the shape of a buffalo.
Yes, they also believe that the bison came out of the small opening and populated the plains. And so they believe that there's a bison in the cave, and that's part of the sign that they wanted shown.
In terms of the geological interpretation, you were talking about it as being a barometer. Is there more you can tell us?
Well, the cave is formed in a limestone layer that's about 300 feet thick, and it tilts down at about a 4 to 5 degree angle to the southeast. As a result of that, if you keep going in one direction far enough, eventually you're going to hit the water table. So we actually have some underground lakes deep in the cave about 450 feet beneath the surface. And so it's a unique place. It's, like I said, 142 miles. You're going to find a lot of different things in it. Unfortunately, if people come here, they expect to see a lot of stalactites and stalagmites. And we have a few, but we don't have very many of those. We have a formation known as boxwork, which we have the best example of boxwork found anywhere in the world. So it's really our signature formation, and one of our speleologists who studies this cave estimates we have around about 95% of the world's population or world's boxwork here in this one cave. So if you come here and expecting to see what you typically see, you're probably not going to see it, but if you're open to seeing something you've never seen before, that's what you're going to find.
What does it look like?
It's kind of a honeycomb formation that hangs from the walls and the ceilings. It's a situation where it's calcite. The limestone in between the calcite eroded away, and it just left the calcite hanging there. It's kind of like if you had a brick wall and you dissolve away the bricks, and all you have left is the mortar. That's what happened here. There's some places where the boxwork is so deep, they call it crate work, because you're crawling past these large fins of boxwork.
When you say crawling past it, is that part of what a visitor would do on the tour?
Well, we actually do in the summertime offer what's called our wild cave tour, where we give you a hard hat, a lamp, and some knee pads. Then we take you crawling through the cave for 3 to 4 hours. And you get an opportunity to see what the cave is like without all the lights and the trails. But the majority of our visitors just go on tours that you go walking through the cave.
Are there any flora or fauna within the cave?
Very little, because there's just not a lot of energy sources. This isn't like a cave that has a river running through it where it brings in things that other animals or insects can live off of. It doesn't have those type of energy sources. So because of that, it's being used for a shelter at night for like pack rats. We have bats that come and go. But they're really using it for a shelter, not really living in it per se. We do have some small, tiny little insects called springtails that live in the cave, but otherwise it really isn't a lot that lives down there.
How would you characterize Wind Caves National Park in relationship to many of the other national parks in the country?
I think it's a real hidden gem. I mean, what people don't realize is it's actually like visiting two parks in one. We have the surface area with over 30 square miles of prairie rolling hills on the surface above us. Then beneath us, we have one of the world's largest caves, longest caves, at 142 miles. So both are rather unique. One thing I like about the surface is that we have a lot of wildlife, and it's very easy to see the wildlife when you come and visit here, because it's a small park, and a lot of times they're very close to the roads.
What is the wildlife?
Well, we have bison, we have elk, we have pronghorn, we have black-footed ferrets, we have prairie dogs, and just most of the animals associated with a mixed grass prairie.
Tom, are there some times when it's better to be here and to view the cave?
Well, that's a great place. We're open year-round, and every year has something for you. I mean, if you came here in the summertime with a thunderstorm rapidly approaching, there's a dramatic change in the air pressure, and then the cave's blowing out maybe 30, 40 miles an hour outside through the small little opening. But my favorite time to come here is on a winter day when it's snowing softly. They come down here to the walk-in and to the natural entrance, and you look inside, and it's just blowing out. There's deep roar. You have a sense that there is something very large down there, and it is, 142 miles so far.
In length.
And I've been back working here since 2001, and that's when the cave crossed 100 miles passageway. Now we're up to 142. So you can see then in the last 13 years approximately, they've almost increased it by half.
Just by exploring, spelunking, and seeing what's there.
Volunteers coming in and going caving. We have over 3,500 unexplored openings in the cave. You know, in the summertime, we'll be offering more than 30 tours a day. We take about 95,000 to 100,000 people through the cave in a year. And the maximum size of the tour is 40 people per day, 40 people on a tour.
Have you noticed or have others noticed any form of degradation of the interior of the cave because of the people who go through?
No, not really. We try to stress that you don't want to touch the walls because everybody has a little bit of oil on their hands. And it would be like taking 100,000 people through your house over the course of a year. And everybody's touching furniture. It's a bad thing. But no, otherwise, it's we keep you on lit trails, concrete trails. So we just kind of take you through a narrow ribbon. I always think that walking through the cave is like driving down a wilderness road at night through a forest where the only lights are the lights of your headlight. And if you stop and you look off into the woods, it disappears in the darkness and it's just wilderness back there. And that's what's happening when you go through the cave. You're on this thin little ribbon of light. And if you were to leave the trail and go 50 feet off trail, you're going to be in total darkness, you're going to be in a total wilderness, and you're probably going to get lost. So it's fun to go through the cave because there's that element of mystery, element of adventure and danger. So overlooking the cave entrance was actually that there's a grave of our first cave explorer, the first systematic cave explorer, a gentleman named Alvin McDonald. He was only 20 years old at the time. He died in 1893 from typhoid fever. And his diary, which we have on display, tells a story of the first early years in terms of exploration. In his diary, very shortly after he got here, he wrote, he said he'd given up hope ever finding the end of Wind Cave. And that's still true today. He also said he wanted to be the permanent guide to Wind Cave, and being buried over the entrance, I assume he probably is the permanent guide to Wind Cave. But it was his family that came here and settled here in 1890 that really helped develop the cave and led to it becoming a national park. They were very poor. If you read his diary, he talks about having to shoot rabbits for food and borrow money for food in town. And eventually they realized they just needed more capital, so they took on a partner by the name of John Stabler and the Stabler family. And so he had the McDonalds living down at the cave entrance. Their house was actually over the trap door that let people in and out of the cave. And then the Stabler family lived right across the way here in a nice hotel, or in a hotel. And so the two families were very dissimilar. And as long as Alvin was alive, they were actually pretty... Things got along really well. The McDonalds were really good at exploring, not that the Stablers weren't, and the Stablers are very good at promoting. If you read the Hot Spring Star, they refer to Mr. Stabler as Happy John, Smiling John, Jolly John. He really comes across as a salesman. In fact, one time he brought in a mind reader, and his stick was that he would be blindfolded, and he could see what was going on by reading the mind of the person next to him. So they hid a hat pin in the cave, and he went into the cave with Alvin and a select committee of members, to see if they could find it. And the news reports were just outlandish in terms of what was going on in the cave, and John Stabler's daughter later wrote in memoirs that they knew where they were all the time, they were bringing food and blankets down to them, but they got some great press out of it. But as soon as Alvin died, the McDonald's started being suspicious that maybe they weren't getting a fair cut of the take. And they demanded to see the books, and pretty soon a feud developed between the two families. And the McDonalds are trying to get the land via a homesteading claim, and the Stablers are trying to get the land from a mining claim. And every time the McDonalds tried to prove up on their homestead, the Stablers blocked them. And after one of the hearings, Mr. Stabler was in town, and somebody asked him how the most recent hearing came on. He says, well, they ruled against us. And the other gentleman says, well, why are you smiling? And he goes, well, because for the first time, they also ruled against the McDonald's. So you could see that it was getting to the point where if I couldn't get the land, I didn't want the other guy to get the land. And eventually the General Land Office, which was a precursor of the BLM, decided that neither one of them really had legal right to land. And they decided to make it into a park. So it was always within federal control. And if the two families had gotten along, it never would have been a national park. And this is just a classic photo because it shows the McDonald's at the bottom and the Stablers up at the top kind of looking down at them. These were working-class people. These were merchant-class people. And I doubt if they ever would have been friends or really got together except for they both trying to get to the cave.
And what is the year of this photograph?
It would have been 1892 or 1893. This is J.D. McDonald. He's the patriarch of the McDonald family, and that's John Stabler. So these two guys, if it hadn't been for them, we wouldn't be standing here today, or if they'd been able to get along. But you can see the CCC came here in the 30s and planted all these pine trees that we're seeing today. Didn't have the look back then. The CCC, when they came here in the 30s, really made the park. Until then, this park was barely scraping by. It was a very poor park. It didn't have very good facilities. And then when the CCC arrived, and I think it was 1932, they made the parking lot, constructed the visitor center, constructed the elevator, made the trail through the cave in terms of a little bit better. They put concrete steps in. And really, we're still benefiting from the work that they did today.
And Tom Farrell, what is your background that has led you to be the chief of interpretation here at Wind Caves National Park?
Well, I always like working for the National Park Service. I like their mission statement in terms of conserving the scenery and the natural and historical objects so people can enjoy them now and also in the future. So on those days where you're wondering, it's like, oh, there's a lot of paperwork that I'm working on, you can always relate it back to the mission of the Park Service. And I really like working for an agency like that. But I grew up nearby, always thought this was a special place, went to school. For some reason at the time, I got a civil engineering degree. Don't use it very often, but I started working here in the summers while I was going to engineering school. And after working for the Boeing Aircraft Company for about a year and a half after college, I realized that this is a whole lot more fun. So I've been working for the National Park Service ever since.
Would you like to continue that, or do you have other dreams yet to fulfill?
Oh, this is a great place. And just working for the National Park Service is a fun job.
Well, Tom Farrell, I want to thank you very much for being with us on Radio Curious here at Wind Caves National Park at the head of the original outlet of the cave.
That's correct.
Tom Farrell, can you tell us a little bit about the website that the National Park Service maintains for the Wind Cave National Park?
We have a website that has over 3,000 pages on it. I mean, you can do a lot of research there. You can learn a lot about us. And then, as you always say, don't forget to follow us on Facebook, because there's a lot of nice little vignettes, a little stories always happening in the park, and we try to include those there.
And I wonder, is there a book that you could recommend to our listeners related to this or any other topic that you're interested in or curious about?
We have a very good geology book that talks about how the cave is formed. And what makes it so unique?
The title, the author?
I have to get back to you on the title. It's written by Dr. Art Palmer.
Okay, we'll find it.
Yeah, we'll find
Tom
it.
Tom Farrell, thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for letting me on.
Tom Farrell is the chief of interpretation at Wind Cave National Park, located in the Black Hills of southwestern South Dakota. On the Wind Cave National Park website, you'll find a particularly interesting video about the park. I'd like to play the audio portion from that video for you now.
Welcome to Wind Cave National Park. Wind Cave is one of the world's longest and most complex cave systems. Mile upon mile of labyrinthine passageways wind their way through ancient limestone rock deep beneath the South Dakota prairie. These mysterious rooms and crawlways are old beyond measure, and what we know of the cave today would still remain hidden if not for the adventuresome individuals who journeyed into the darkness and questioned what lay around the next bend. The cave's first serious explorer was Alvin McDonald. Alvin moved to the area with his brother Elmer, sister Mary, and father Jesse McDonald in 1889. The McDonalds were all involved in the exploration of the cave to some extent, although it was Alvin, who at 16, when he started his expeditions, found a particular love of the cave. Alvin would often leave a trail of twine behind him as he explored the dark rooms and crawlways, ensuring that he would be able to retrace his steps through the seemingly endless tunnels. A candle would illuminate the cave walls as he plunged deep into the underground wilderness. Even today, when we look on the ceilings and walls of the cave, we can see evidence of these early expeditions in the form of signatures and arrows. Alvin explored the cave in this manner for only 4 years, until his death from typhoid fever at just 20 years old. Still, in the short amount of time, he was able to explore nearly 10 miles of passageway, a monumental achievement even by the standards of today. Without Alvin driving the cave exploration, little in the way of new discoveries happened in the years that followed. it wasn't until the 1960s, nearly 70 years after the death of Alvin, that major discoveries were made once more in the depths of Wind Cave. During this time, cave explorers Herb and Jan Kahn, along with Dave Schnoody, found this passage, which would eventually become known as the Spillway, a tight crawl that quite literally spills over into miles of undiscovered cave, finally breaking out of the historic portion of cave found by the McDonalds. This discovery allowed the Kahns and others to go on to discover new sections of cave previously unknown and uncharted. Since the Kahns discovered the spillway, many new and exciting discoveries have been made in the depths of Wind Cave. Lakes hundreds of feet below the surface. Chambers so large that your light is lost into the darkness. All these and more lie deep beneath the Windy Prairie. Even today, the cave is still being explored, and it is possible that hundreds of miles of passageways are waiting to be discovered by future generations of cave explorers.
You have just heard the audio portion of a video about the Wind Cave National Park, which you can view on the park's website, www.nps.gov/WICA. Before that, we visited with Tom Farrell, the Chief of Interpretation at Wind Cave National Park, located in the Black Hills of southwestern South Dakota. The book that Tom Farrell recommends is Wind Cave, An Ancient World Beneath the Hills by Art Palmer. Wind Cave's stories and history, including links to the Lakota Sioux creation myth, may be found at the Wind Cave National Park website, www.nps.gov/WICA. This interview was recorded at Wind Cave National Park on September 23rd, 2014. There are over 500 archive editions of Radio Curious on our website, www.radiocurious.org, where they're free for you to stream, download, enjoy, and share. We appreciate your curiosity, ideas, comments, and questions. You may reach us by email. Our address is curious@radiocurious.org or snailmail 280 North Oak Street, Ukiah, that's UKIAH, California 95482, or by phone 707-462-6541. You've been listening to Radio Curious. Christina Onnestad is our associate producer, and I'm host and producer, Barry Vogel. Thank you for listening.